All right, welcome back to this edition of So What, the ASEP's Foam Skeptics Podcast. We're joined today by Susan Miller. Susan is a clinical assistant professor of emergency medicine at East Carolina University, traveling down there from the Philly, Jersey area. She's a very well-accomplished toxicologist, having done her fellowship at Drexel. She's done a residency at Cooper. I mean, all-around great doc, and she's going to talk with us a little bit today about some of the stuff coming out about narcotics. Thanks for joining us, Susan.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right, let's get started. Let's go to a straight to a case. So you get you're working that nasty overnight shift. It's busier than heck. And all of a sudden, it seems like the ER is grinding to a halt. All the nurses and the resident are putting on just this side of hazmat suits. And you wander over as everybody's, you know, getting over there. And these people are asking about PAPRs and level A suits. And you ask what's going on. And you're told that a patient's coming in by ambulance, arrested during a drug bust. And there was presumably carfentanil powder that may or may not still be on this patient. And so the residents are looking over at you saying, so we got a gown and glove like this because, you know, we could touch that and we could all die. What do you say to them? You help them get gowned and gloved here, or what are you going to do?
I would treat them as an ordinary patient. If I feel like I need universal precautions, I do universal precautions. Otherwise, I'm not going to do anything particularly special for this patient. If I see white powder, I'm not going to touch it. Then I might put on gloves. But most of the time, you're not even going to have the heads up on this kind of patient. So I'm not going to do anything particularly special for him.
So you don't feel like that carfentanil powder is this danger out there that's lurking? It's going to kill us all?
Oh, I do feel like it's a danger out there lurking. But I don't feel like that just touching it, we're going to all die.
Fair enough. So there is one iatrogenic case report that's been batted about in the literature about this one police officer who supposedly got it. It didn't really ring true for me either. But I think this brings up the bigger point, and that is carfentanil and some of the synthetic homemade narcotics, these are nasty actors.
Yeah, they tend to be more powerful than our traditional street drugs. So we're having to use a lot more naloxone than we would in the past.
Now, are these hitting home for you in Carolina, or...
We've had some suspected cases, but I don't think we've had any confirmed cases yet.
I used to work in Ohio, and we had some of the nastiest ones. I think that the big question for everyone is, you know, is there really such a thing as too much Narcan? And how do you go about really resuscitating these people accurately?
If I get to like 10 milligrams of Narcan, it doesn't matter what kind of opiate they're on. That's to me like to the point where it's not working. And then so unless I know for sure it's that substance, I don't think I push it beyond 10 milligrams of Narcan. I then go to airway and breathing and intubate the patient and take care of him that way. Because then I worry that maybe it's not what everyone says it is.
Sure. And I think that
that's... it's not an opiate at that point. It's something else.
And I've actually heard some counter argument to this, and you bring up a great point. Do we need to necessarily go as far as we can with Narcan with these folks? Or do we say, hey, look, you got four Narcan, it didn't work. Here's your plastic and here's your ICU admit. I mean, is it necessarily wrong to stop this?
No, I don't think so. I think that it might be even better for the patient in the long run because then their withdrawal can be managed while they're intubated and not, you know, a thrashing patient in your emergency department or on the traditional hospital floor or okay. Wherever you can stick your Narcan drip patients.
So then let me ask you this question. So let's go back to the premise on the show here. You get an overdose patient in tonight, you're working overnight shift, and you've given four of Narcan. Patient is still persistently obtunded, respiratory is bagging the patient. Where do you go?
At four,
yeah.
I'm thinking about intubating them. I might try some more Narcan if I really thought it was opioid. Like if they have an opioid toxidrome sitting in front of me and nothing else, then I might push more Narcan. But like I said, 10 is really the furthest I go on that. And I've doubled it each time. So four and then eight, that's a total of 12. I don't think he's going to get much better. If he's not getting better, then that's where I have them get intubated.
All right. So the other question is, what's the utility of a Narcan drip in these folks?
So if it works and their respiratory rate can be sustained with just a Narcan drip, then you don't have all the complications of being intubated. So no pneumonias, no all of that other stuff.
All right.
In our hospital, sometimes Narcan drips, if they're not being titrated, can go to not the ICU. So if that's your hospital policy, you might not be taking up an ICU bed.
You gotta love for podcasting that special unit, right? There's ICU and not ICU. Those are like the two units you have in the hospital,
Well, we have four, but like we have, it's called an intermediate unit, and they do a lot of stuff that I would have never thought. Some of those patients in there, they could be at ICUs at other hospitals.
Absolutely. So, if I'm hearing you correctly, and correct me if I'm not, because I'm not a toxicologist, I just play one
No,
on
that's okay.
TV. There's a lot of hype about this carfentanil stuff, but it doesn't sound like you're changing much, right? You're getting the patient in. EMS has tried around a Narcan or two. They've bagged the patient. They bring them in. They're still bagging the patient. You try around a Narcan or two, and you don't do too much to try and figure out whether it's carfentanil or not. You're saying,
No.
hey, listen, I'm going to a couple rounds of Narcan. This ain't working. We're moving to supportive care and let them sort it out in the ICU or not ICU, depending on how things worked out.
Yeah, if it's carfentanil, it's up to the police to figure out whether or not it's carfentanil. I mean, I could probably send out GC mass spec stuff to a national lab somewhere and come back in a week or two, and that might be helpful for the police later, but they're going to have their tests done from stuff they found at the scene faster than I'm going to have my tests done.
So it's not going to matter for the practical purpose of the patient that we see in the ER tonight. What's going to matter
No.
to us is that we keep in mind that you can go to higher doses of Narcan than we previously used, but really at a certain point, stop chasing your tail and get these people intubated and upstairs.
Yeah,
Well, that's a good
least
point. Now,
that's m
as long as I've got a toxicologist on and we're talking about opiates, when I worked in Ohio, we had a big problem with heroin, and I got in the habit of opening doses of Narcan of 2 milligrams and 4 milligrams. And when I've worked other places outside of that heroin overdose belt, the nurses are still hesitant to ever push anything above 0.4 milligrams of Narcan. So what's your opening salvo? Just so I know, you're not in a super heavy overdose place. Do you open with 0.4 or do you open with 2?
So when I trained in Camden, everybody was heroin and we started with 0.4 and most of those people woke up fine and then 2 hours later went home after their turkey sandwich and didn't get resedated. But here where I am now, it's all pills. And so 0.4 doesn't seem to do it. I start with 2 milligrams. And that's what the police and EMS carry is 2 milligrams. So that's what they're getting by first responders, at least in this area.
Is there a
So
downside to opening like that?
there is, because if you reverse them too fast, they can get some pulmonary edema. And obviously, they can get withdrawal. And fighting a withdrawal patient in the back of an ambulance is no fun. So let me give you an example. Back when bath salts were a huge hit, we had a couple of patients who would do heroin and bath salts at the same time. And so they would reverse their heroin and then pop up as bath salts and be this crazy maniac person in the back of the ambulance, requiring, by the time they got to the emergency department, 15 of Ativan and 15 of Haldol, and they get intubated just because they are punching everybody. So,
And then
I
we just
mean,
refer them to our earlier podcast on ketamine for excited delirium, but that's all
right.
right.
So, I mean, like you went from a patient who wasn't breathing to a patient who was basically a tornado. So, I like to go low and slow. There are some people who start at even 0.04 milligrams of Narcan and then just slowly titrate it up. Or I know other people do, like they'll put 2 milligrams and mix it in with a 10 cc syringe and just slowly push that until the patient does what they want them to do, which is usually breathing better, sometimes moving spontaneously. The risks are, you know, you go from a patient you can handle to a patient you can't. And then there are the risks of Narcan itself, which is, you know, pulmonary edema is the big one.
Now, the pulmonary edema, though, I mean, when we look at the literature, it's not all that terribly common.
No,
I mean, it's
it's not.
I don't want to have our listeners out there like, oh, can't use Narcan
No,
anymore. Here comes pulmonary
no,
edema. Yeah,
no.
there's literature on it, but it's really on the rare side of life, and certainly
Yeah.
we want to be reversing folks. So, last question. As long as, again, I love this. I got a toxicologist's brain to pick. I mean, come on, how much fun is this? So, the last question, because you mentioned it again, was they went home in 2 hours. I think that's one of the big national debates with these guys, right? You get the person who comes in, they've overdosed, and they'll give you a great great story. You know, I've had a couple of these guys who have moved, especially those who've moved from pills to heroin, who say, look, I was trying to get high and I'm not that good of a heroin user yet. You know, I just switched over from Percocet. It's just gotten too expensive. Heroin's a whole lot cheaper. I shot up today and I obviously missed the mark. I have no desire to kill myself. I also have no desire to get off the heroin. This was not a suicide attempt. This was a misadventure and I want to go home. Yeah. How long do you keep them?
I generally talk to them and tell them, I want to watch you for 2 or 3 or 4 hours, and then, you know, I'll let you go home at that point. Usually, if it's straight up heroin, I feel comfortable after 2 hours, especially if they're still sitting there looking at you being like, I want to go, and they haven't had any signs of resedation or anything like that. If I'm worried that there's other things in the heroin, because it goes in waves, you know, at some points you'll get these reports from your local police officers. Oh yeah, we've been seeing some fentanyl in the area, or we've had a lot of deaths in this particular zone where we picked this patient up. Then maybe I would try to convince them to stay longer till at least like 2 half-lives of the Narcan have gone through. So that's the 4-hour mark for me. And if they're fine, I let them go.
What now, about if they state an intent to go right out and do it again?
I can't prevent people from being stupid.
You can't cure stupid, but you can sedate it.
But if it's pills and they're telling me they did it by accident on pills, I keep them a lot longer. I often admit these patients just to watch them because you don't know how fast they're going to absorb it and if they're going to resedate and if they're going to, at that point, need more naloxone. So
do you feel like you can hold them? I mean, if they say to you, listen, I did it on pills. My brother's Percocet and I didn't realize he had 10s and I only have 5s and I took a handful and oops. I missed, you know, but now I'm better. I want to go home.
So I do everything I can to just make them stay. Most of the time they are agreeable. They don't actually want to die. So as long as you're attending to all their other needs, like drinks and sandwiches and blankets and stuff like that, for the most part, I can convince people to stay.
All right. Well, from a show, but go ahead.
I don't force anybody. I could. In North Carolina, we can involuntarily keep people, but I don't.
So that's one of the things I'd like to point out for our listeners. Really, you need to know your state laws on this. Some states do allow mental hygiene laws to keep people against their will, to put people in for involuntary commitments and petitions for involuntary commitments based solely on drug abuse. Other states specifically exclude it. So certainly know your local laws. In some of the cases, there's nothing we can do. And interestingly, there was a very recent case law in New York State rather, where a very heavily intoxicated individual who was sober enough to say that they didn't want to stay left the hospital and was struck by a car. And the courts actually ruled for the emergency department that our responsibility ended when our legal ability to hold the person ended. So, you know, your mileage may vary. I'm not a lawyer. I don't even play one on TV. Know your state laws about holding these folks and don't hold them if you can. But to sum it up, so let's bring this all home. Don't change your resuscitation. Do it the way you normally do it. Expect to use heavier amounts of Narcan than you've used, and don't, you know, while you probably shouldn't lick the white powder off of your patient, these level A hazmat suits are probably overkill.
Right. I tell people, use your common sense. If you don't know what it is, don't touch it. If it's not yours, don't touch it.
Fair enough.
So if it's a white powder on their nose, it could be cocaine and it could be heroin. So how about we just not touch it? And if you do, use a glove.
Always good advice. If it's wet and sticky and not yours, don't touch it.
Right.
That's gotten you. That's good. It's everyone far in life. I mean, come on. All right. But it's good to know that a lot of this is more hype than hurt. And if we keep to our principles and we do what we know how to do and we do it well, these folks are going to do okay.
Yep.
All right. So I really appreciate your time. How can people get a hold of you if they wanted to talk further?
They can get me through my email at ECU. So it's millersu@ecu.edu. Or I have a Twitter account that I kind of use sometimes. It's toxic_tweets.
All right. So toxic tweets or millersu@ecu.edu.
Yep.
And people can get a hold of me at Dr. Howie Mell. That's at DrHowieMell on Twitter. Otherwise, howie.mell@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being here, Susan.
Oh, thank you.
Stay safe, everyone.
The best part about having your own podcast is you always get the last word. So here it is. When you're dealing with overdoses of opioids these days, we have to be on the lookout for fentanyl and carfentanil as synthetic opioids with a very different picture than the traditional heroin and Percocet overdoses that we're used to seeing. These may require a significant amount more of Narcan than we're used to giving out. However, you do need to balance the question of whether you should be using large amounts of Narcan to reverse these folks, or whether you should give the traditional amounts, maybe a bit more, up to 10 or 12 milligrams, and then consider just supportive care as they come out, because it may be a polysubstance overdose. Now, this does become a little bit problematic when you have one of these events that hits your town where either carfentanil or particularly strong heroin is suddenly present, and you have 30 overdoses in a 48-hour period. With those, unfortunately, it's going to be batten down the hatches and drown them in Narcan and use up as many of the vents as you've got available, but these do kind of border almost on disasters. But the other thing to be aware of is that it is extraordinarily unlikely that you or your staff will become intoxicated with fentanyl merely because of the existence of the powder on your patient. Certainly, if it's not yours, don't touch it, and always wear gloves, but full level A hazmat suits are probably not necessary here. To paraphrase Dr. Miller, treat these overdoses like you'd treat any other overdose. And I think that's about the simplest way to think about it. And remember, whether it's schadenfreude or saving lives, we got one of the best jobs in the world. Thanks for listening.